time.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Daryl Urbanski, your host as always. And today we are joined by Dr. Manita Song-Mi-Zai Lau, a powerhouse in the world of business solutions and premium marketing operations. Currently the vice president at Tiger Resort Leisure and Entertainment, Inc., Dr. Lau has an illustrious career spanning over two decades. With a doctorate in business administration from California Southern University and an MBA in human resources from Chaminade University of Honolulu, she's a seasoned expert in business development and strategy. Dr. Lau is renowned for her ability to cultivate successful teams, launch strategic directives, and foster strong business relationships. Her mantra, excellence in every endeavor. I've asked her to join us here today to share her story and talk about the world of business, leadership, and success. So Manita, thank you so much for joining us today. How are you?
Thank you for having me. I'm great. Thank you. And happy Friday from Manila.
That's right. Happy Friday from the Philippines. What? So before we hop into, you know, what you've learned over all these years, what you consider fundamentals, I always like to ask, how did you even get started in business? Is this a family career path? Is this something your parents were into and you took the torch and ran with it?
No, not really. Actually, I just graduated in Honolulu and I got internship and in one of the local hotel chain business in human resources. So that is where I started my business or my career in human resources. I am with them for almost 15 years in human resources. Then I moved back to Macau and that is where I really started stepping into the casino industry. And that is how I get into where I am currently.
Got it. So thank you for outlining that. What were some of the biggest challenges that you faced in your career?
I believe is because I was born in Thailand and grew up in Macau and then get educated in Western. So that is more like a cultural kind of cultural shock for me in the beginning. But luckily in Honolulu or Hawaii, we know that they have a very great melting pot, that they are a melting pot on different culture, different nationality that were joining over there. So that is a lesser shock to me. But what happened is that once I get used to how it was, especially in the business world over there, the Western way of doing business and management and all that, the first time when I moved back to Macau, and that is where I do not say it's cultural shock, but it's more a management or business shock to me. Yes, because in the US especially, discriminations, age discriminations, the how you look and all that is discriminations, especially when I work in human resources for so many years.
Right.
But once I stepping into Macau business, that is the first thing, because I were with the pre-opening team in Venetian Macau. My boss, who were the director of rooms at that time, just gave me a bunch of what you call the CV, our resume, and to look at, to select it, because I initially were in the front desk at that time, the front desk manager. So I looked through the CV, of course, with my previous career that is in human resources. Right. I would look at the skill and all that to match. However, when I submitted to my boss, is completely different because they have this picture attached to this CV. So he goes by the look, how they look, how the photos, is this pretty enough to be in the front desk and all that. So I was open my mouth and said, what is, you can do that? Because what I find is someone who is very handsome, but he has 10 years experience in security, but he chosen that person in the front desk because of the look. And so I was really shocked at that time. Yeah, that is the main difference that I find in my career. Yeah.
That's a real challenging thing because obviously we want to have a meritocracy where typically the best people at performing in the job rise to the top without discrimination. And it's tough because there's some people feel they've established rules of thumb, and it might be really discriminatory to other groups of people. There might be validity to it, but it may not apply to everyone. we got a helper to, I'll give you a good example to that for the audience that may or may not, because we have a worldwide audience. Like, we got a helper in here, cook clean, make sure our daughter gets to like her sports, her soccer, ballet, jujitsu, math school, all that stuff. And we originally got a younger girl, and a friend of ours said, oh, that's a mistake. You don't want a young girl. You want an older woman. And I was like, I don't know. As long as they perform, they're certified, they did the course, they're, I think it's BNI or something cleared. Like, we're good. We just, right. We picked the best one. But when she came, I realized she'd taken the job. She is a daughter in Davao who needs medicine, and she's got two young kids. And I felt like it was sometimes uncomfortable because I'd be here with my family, and I know like she's away from her kids. She's like on FaceTime with them, and she ended up not staying and leaving. And I felt like part of it was just her life situation. She was just trying to make enough money to pay for meds back home. And I'm not really sure. And I almost felt like it was a bit of an issue because she's at that age where she's trying to have her own family and it's not functional. And then she's here with us and we're very functional. And I just felt tense. And then we ended up hiring somebody else who did happen to be older. It wasn't that we necessarily tried that. And it has been great. It has been like, what a great fit. But I it's a tough line to walk because you don't want to discriminate against people that could do a great job and maybe just really need to be given a chance. Can you speak to that a little bit? What is your, you've across culture, all the rules, right? Working different countries. Can you speak to that a little bit? Like, how does a company navigate that?
Sure. Actually, what I could say is that it really depends on the country, how their labor law are. When I moved from Macau to the Philippines, I believe the Philippines is still using the U.S. in regards to the labor law and the discriminations. That is similar back to where we were in the U.S. Is, I believe if you are going to move around the world, you just have to really adjust it to where the culture is. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you would really have a hard time in managing the people that you that they were under you.
Right.
Because when I were in the US is no, when I were in the Philippines, the people that under me is really different from those in the Macau right. or in the US. I find that people over here is tend to be a little bit very sensitive. They are very friendly. They are very sensitive. It's easily to cry. You have to find a way to discipline them without really, how to say that, without really too harsh. Sometimes right. when you say maybe one word that they really find that is so harsh to them, and they could really come back and file discrimination. You really discriminate me, especially when I were the expat working in the Philippines.
Right. I've learned that too, that often it's best to have almost like a liaison between you and the team.
Exactly. For that exactly. Cultural,
yeah.
Correct. Correct. Because they could find a lot of things that say, do you say that to me because you were the expat and we were the local? There is a discrimination because we do have a lot of managers who just came into this market and they did not really adapting to how we should handling our team member over here. So they did get sue on those. Yes, we wow. do have examples of those.
Yeah. I read this interesting, I was reading a book about working with Filipinos. And one of the things I thought was interesting is like, people don't think about the nuance. There's actually a book called, maybe it was Blink. It was Malcolm Gladwell. He wrote a bunch of good books. I think it was Blink. It was about expertise, but it was talking about the difference. It might've been The Tipping Point, but he was talking about the difference in culture just in the United States and China. And how in China, there's lots of rice farmers, and rice farming is a very complex thing. There's a lot of intricacies to it. But then you have the culture in North America. You've got the farmers of the North and the livestock and cattle ranchers of the South. And that it's a different thing. In the South, you're trying to protect your herd from poachers, from wild animals. And so being tough and just like being a deterrent alone and attitude-wise, I think there was a court case mentioned where these guys used to bully at a gas station, used to bully some kid all the time. And one day he came and shot him with a shotgun. And the jury in Texas was like, not guilty. And the reason was, is he wouldn't have been much of a man if he didn't do anything about it, was them. But for us in other parts, we're like, that's crazy. You're like, what are you talking about? But it's a different mentality. as a cattle rancher versus, again, the Chinese, the different styles of farming. And to rope this in, I'm from Canada, and in Canada, we have four seasons. So if you have to grow your food, you have 4 to 6 months, maybe 8 months to grow food in. So you better be on time and schedule really fast, or your family will starve. Whereas in the Philippines, you can grow food all day, every day. You can take a siesta nap in the afternoon. And it was like just describing some of the cultural differences, that punctuality and urgency is a little different here. And also because of the colonies, the colonizers, like the Spanish, when they came, often the captain, he would be late to things because he's such a busy guy. So it's almost fashionable if you go to a birthday party here or an event that the main guest shows up late. And it's a sign of importance and value that they make everyone wait for them because they're so important. Whereas for us in the West, we're like, what is wrong with you? And so it's this cultural thing. If you're the boss, you should be on time. Correct. You should be there early. And so these slight cultural differences.
Yeah, it's working. In what I really realized that it's not only about how you know the law, but you also, the most important is how you know the culture and the way that it works there. That would really help. And on how you are going to manage in that country.
And how do you suggest, what do you do if you feel like you've got to work with a different culture? And how do you juggle that?
I guess what actually throughout this year, what I really learned is that people management, regardless which culture that you are going in, if you have a very good and decent and really fair kind of treatment to every single one of them, then that is already your basic that you could go into any culture, that you can go into any country that to manage them with respect, especially.
Right. Have you read the book How to Win Friends and Influence People?
I read through halfway.
Yeah. I think that might be a good guide for people if they're looking for a book. It's just a good guide where if you don't know where to start and if you're on a very multicultural, that is such a great book. It has been a classic for decades. And I think part of it is because it has little nuanced things about how to deal with humans. And you don't want to be naive. I remember I first went to Japan. And I was so naive. I remember we stopped over on the west coast of Canada for 3 months. We're flying to Tokyo. And when we finally flew to Tokyo, my friend drove us to the airport and dropped us off. And when I was walking into the airport to fly to Japan, he was like, sayonara. And I remember turning back and be like, yeah, that's Japanese, isn't it? I had no idea what I was getting into. And I was all like, we're all humans. We have hair and skin and hearts. And we're just people, one earth, one love. There are real differences between cultures. It took me a year and a half to figure out how offensive I was in day-to-day engagements, just being a happy, friendly Canadian walking around, not trying to do anything. Like in English, you've got like casual, rude, casual, polite, formal, three layers of etiquette. In Japan, they have five layers of etiquette. I have a friend from there. He lived there 16 years and eventually got married. And on his wedding day, he said it was like out of a movie. He went to sleep the night before, drinking up with his buddies, laughing. And the next day, he had no idea what anybody was saying to him. And he was being ushered through the day because they were talking to him with the highest level etiquette. And it was a vocabulary he had never heard before. So like people are giving speeches and crying and he just has no idea what they're saying because he'd never heard that level of etiquette before.
Yes. I think respect is really important. I think on the Western culture, we tend to be very direct when we say things.
Right.
But sometimes in any culture, especially on the East, Asia and all that, you have to be a little bit respectful, especially if the person is a little bit older than you.
Right.
That you need to be talk to them a little bit more respectful, even though you are disciplined them. You have to be respectfully disciplined.
Right. You have to love on the person. You have to almost really make sure you separate the person and the issue at hand.
Right.
And let them know that I really respect you and value you.
Correct.
This thing here, though, we have to talk about. Not you.
Exactly.
This thing here. So what are some, you've given some great tips, talked about respect, understanding the different cultures, really diving into understanding, just mastering people skills. and fundamental people skills. I think we're so far from the day when some people would bring cupcakes or something for the office, or make a personalized birthday card for someone. In the Philippines, I don't even know where you go buy birthday cards here. I'm so surprised by that. So some of these old school fundamental love on people skills, are there any other behaviors or skills that you think are important to improve or develop?
I have been talking to even to my own teams. I always said, you know what? I am, even though whatever my title is, VP, director, or whatever, that is just the title that for me to take on any responsibility that I have towards you and also towards the company. And also those were the title, just the name, just the things that I have to face outside world. But in the office, in the workplace, I'm just like you. I'm just Manita. I learn from you. You learn from me. So we just share our knowledge together. So that is how I really manage my team. And besides, I also to grow them. For example, even though initially I might only have the what you call administrative and training team, but throughout the administrative and training team, I also develop other small group to do some other stuff. Let's say the system, handling the system and all that. I look at how my team, what are their skill, and I try to move them to develop other skills. So that is how I kind of grow my team in terms of their talent and skills.
Thank you. Great answer. Now I want to pivot a little bit. What does premium marketing operations mean?
Okay. If you go into any casino, especially the integrated resort, you will see the counter inside the casino floor that is the membership. So those are and also the sign up your membership. We do have the counter that do the reward circle items, exchanging your points for some items. And we are handling all the VIP that come in, the host. So those are the premium marketing operations. Yes.
Got it. So you're hitting a lot of the VIPs and subscribers.
Correct. Correct.
Got it. Can you speak to what you feel are some of the fundamentals of marketing and sales to VIPs like that?
Actually, my world before in hospitality, you can say that. And my world right now is in casino.
Right.
When I compare the type of clientele or the way that I have to service them, they are completely different world. The hospitality side, yes, you might have some demanding guests and all that, but this demanding guest is only to a certain level. But when you come to the casino, they are completely different. Their demanding is way beyond what you can imagine.
Really?
Yes, especially on the VIP side. I can give you some example. Let's say, for example, I have this one VIP guest that come in with different ladies at different times. So our host would have to know, okay, when this lady come, I can just say miss. When this lady come, I cannot mention about a miss. I have to call her Mrs. So and so all of that thing. So when the guest would tell our host and say, oh, can you help me sending this gift to this person? Our host would have to know, okay, this person is a miss or a missus.
Right.
Otherwise, we would address them completely, totally and disaster.
the wrong mix up there, the wrong gift
exactly.
to the wrong woman could
exactly.
cause a lot of problems.
And our guest is very demanding. Yes,
Matt. What are some other examples of demanding and how do you handle that?
They would come to your host and then ask your host, do you have a lady to introduce to me? I just want it for one night. So our host would have to be the agent that know where to get comfort. And our host is just like a salesperson that need to know every single thing. It's Wikipedia that you can tell that they know if the guest come and ask for this, I know where to get it and to justify. Of course, the illegal stuff, we don't
Right.
touch on those. But something just like this, and the guest might come, and how would you tell a guest who I think you might some of the I don't know, there are a vital YouTuber that who happened to catch so a pair of our guests who enjoy themselves outside in the corridors that
Oh.
went around. So how would the host tell the guest or comfort the guest that?
How do you tell them you got to put your clothes on and do that in your room?
Exactly.
It sounds like a bunch of teenagers, a bunch of drunken teenagers
Not
that
really.
you have to,
Not really.
like a
Our
bunch of
guess is.
wild, drunken teenagers that just horny people humping everything. I'm just making jokes here, but yeah.
Right.
So
But
that's a delicate situation because
exactly.
I guess part of the casino is to, it's the whole what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas kind of thing, in the sense of people come to cut loose and relax. And at the same time, you have to have padded corners around things, if that makes sense. Like they're coming to, it's an amusement park for adults to a certain extent, but
Yes.
there's real laws, right? That you have to be, and there's also, you can't have one guest infringing on the experience of another guest, right? Family can't come out of the elevator and see these two in the hallway.
Yes. You actually, we are dealing with different type, different nature of guests.
Right.
It can come in with very, I'm not discrimination here, but it's just
Right.
that some lower class guests, we also have to serve them. Some CEO or owners of a big company, we also have to serve them. So they have different type of demands.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And then, so that sounds like that kind of covers the premium marketing operations. How many, you say the person has to be a sales rep. How does that work? Like, how do you market and sell the premium services, the membership, the VIP experience? Because some of this isn't, I've been to Vegas a bunch of times. Some of this stuff is not cheap at all. Is there any fund? I'm just asking for the small business owners that may be listening to this. Maybe they're starting out, maybe they're struggling. Are there any fundamentals of marketing and sales that you think apply, or how are they different between one type of clientele versus another in terms of fundamentals?
I think the fundamental is just the relations, how your host building the relations with that guest. We do have hosts that has doesn't matter where they which company that they move to, the guest would follow them because of the relations that they have been built with that guest. Yes.
Got it. That's a
Yes.
really powerful message.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. And this reminds me, I went home for Christmas. I had helped a client do $1 million in San Diego, and I went home for Christmas, and I was, running into kids I grew up with, and one of them was a contractor, and he was like, "Daryl, what's the best marketing dollars that I can spend? I want to grow my contracting business." And I said, "Where?" He's like, "Should I do like Facebook ads? Should I, what should I do? Should I do flyers? What? How do I make money with my marketing?" And I told him, I asked him, where does most of your work come from? Like, how many clients do you have? He's like, "Oh, I got maybe four or six guys that send me most of my work." I'm like, "And how much are these guys paying you?" And it was a significant sum of money. It was well over six figures, whether it was one-on-one or combined, I forget. But when I said, then the best marketing dollars you could probably send would be a bottle of their favorite drink on their birthday,
That's right.
Christmas gifts,
That's
remembering
correct.
their anniversary, their kids' names, their kids' birthdays. This
That's
is some of
correct.
the best marketing dollars. And I can attest to this. I've probably have clients. I have one client in mind I'm thinking of now. I probably paid maybe $500 over 3 years, and she probably paid me well over $250,000. My wife, same thing. I told her to do the same thing, and she sent chocolates and cards to some of her guests. And that one, she had one guest, I think, referred seven clients to her and stick with her for over 3 years as well. And I think the resounding message for this is get better at loving on people. And especially in an age where everyone wants to automate everything, or they, right? They, I want to, I know my background on Zoom, for those that have the video, is the beach, but everyone wants to just be on the beach doing what they want to do. The people that are spending the money, they have a problem, or there's something that they want, and they're spending money to get that. And when they're paying that money, they don't want you to be checked out somewhere else. And I think that's a big, is that, are you, yeah, I don't want
I
to
think
word you mouth.
because nowadays we also rely on the technologies and we
Right.
forget about the human touch. So I think that is the very important, the human touch, even though you just go and say, oh, hi, Mr. So-and-so, you have been with us for so long. So how is our service? A very simple conversations just to get to know them. That is real things.
And how do you help manage all these details for hundreds and thousands of guests and have front staff? Because I forget the name of it, but there was some study done. It was like 125 people. Like the average person can only hold 125 contacts in their head. And then everybody else you meet, it's just shuffling for a position in those top 125.
I have to give this credit to our host. They do handle their 100 guests each. They know them. Yes, they know them.
Are you using any sort of software tools to help with this? Is there a process around this where anytime
We
you
do
interact
have
with
some software that can help them. They would just go in and because we do ask them, let's say for example, if there's a new guest that come in, we do from time to time we do ask the host what is their preference, the food, the update the preference. So that is how we also helping the host to jot down and remind that oh this guest has this preference and all that.
Yeah, I have one of my best friends. He's just a fantastic, probably one of the best marketers I know. And he always says every time any of my staff engage with a customer, there must be a button to be pushed somewhere. Anytime they
Exactly.
engage with someone, there must be a button or something to be clicked to
Yes.
track and note that engagement, what it
Correct.
was. And sometimes it could cascade a whole series of events. Like at
Yes.
my martial arts school, if somebody joined, I had a 6-month contract and a 12-month contract, and I had an email follow-up series automated that it was maybe, I don't want to say impersonal, but it was the things that would be the same for everyone. Like first week follow-up survey, end of first 30 days, like a mini course went for onboarding, 5-month follow-up and six, like just things that you would, that are kind of default for everyone. Like you say, the nuance personalization is tough,
Yes,
but that's
that's right.
doable too. I actually had in my martial arts school, we had an internal web form. This is a tip for anyone that may be a little bit savvy. We had an internal web form for staff, like one of the fields, like you have name and phone number and all that, but there was actually a field for injury and a button to click, a checkbox. And if somebody had gotten injured, they had to put the injury in there and check the checkbox. And the syntax was your blank, your knee, your shoulder, your finger, your ankle. And I had a campaign that went on for 3 years that would follow up with them. And I've got emails from people. I got this one guy's, dude, I haven't been at your school for a year and you're asking me how my knee is doing. You are the greatest coach ever. And it's not like I was emailing him every day. There would be like an 8-month gap. But then they get an email, they'd be like, hey, Manita, I was watching a movie last night and the main character hurt their knee. Made me think of you. How are you at your knee? These little
Right.
things. Yeah.
Yes. Just some details, observations, and all that would help a lot.
So is there any sort of training that you offer staff to help them develop these skills? Some of it's people skills, some of it sounds like leadership, marketing and sales.
Actually, when we selected our host, we do have to select it from their characters because not everyone is a great host. Some of them do not really have that upsell skill, or some of them don't have that detail-oriented kind of personality. And some of them is too shy to be the host. So we do have to find a perfect personality to be at where they supposed to be. And outgoing has to, that is a must for a salesperson. You have to be an outgoing person. And right now, last year, what we have a training with for them is the cultural training. Because our guests coming from all different part of the world. So they need to be a little bit aware of, let's say Chinese, what are their superstitions when they play gambling and all that. So we do have that kind of training for them to know about it. Yeah.
Is this something that's developed by a department in-house, or is this something that you get outside
No, actually, we
sources?
asked because we do have some expat from Korea, Japan, and all that. Those are the team members that we pull on and let them share what kind of because it is hard to have a trainer who don't know our industry to come in and really train our host. They have to have that gambler mindset. that thing. So we normally pull from our own team members to come and do the training.
Got it. And what are some of the habits that you're most successful, or the most successful people that you have? What are some of the habits that you've seen over your years that you think are the most important in terms of success and longevity in sort of these sales and marketing roles?
Is the how to say it is the someone who can bring up a topic professionally and not just like a housewife that going around and gossiping about certain thing, because you are still representing the company, so you have to have that professional in you. But also you can bring up any kind of topics that you think your audience is interested in. Let's say, for example, if you're facing someone who is who has a business in maybe in textile industry. Okay, you might have to bring up, oh, where are you? I know that in currently a lot of foreign company were being pulled out from China and go to Vietnam because they have a cheaper labor and all that. So those kind of things that they need to carry in them and know when and where to bring it up.
So they need to be able to.
So that way they can build a rapport between their audience and them.
That makes perfect sense. What do you think are some of the biggest mistakes that you see either staff or other entrepreneurs making? Even when you talk about going shopping today, what are some of the biggest mistakes that you see others making?
Our host has too much of the leeway, and also because we gave them a lot, we empower them a lot when they can bring the guests to eat, and then just they we authorize them to come, we authorize them to give gift and all that. So this is also some kind of, I think, is a weakness to the business too, that we empower them too much, and it is a lot of temptations there that they would use this power for their own.
Right,
Yes,
right, right.
they might bring their whole family to come in and just using some of the players' account and to come and to, because we have it is a lot of temptations over there.
So do you find you have to micromanage people, or how would you handle that? How do you handle, I should say?
We reminded them, and we do times to time audit. Yes, to keep them in track.
Yeah, and I guess incentives probably play a big role in this as well. There has to be an incentive somehow to not use it, and a benefit perhaps to using it, right? Because
Yes.
incentives are everything. And if there is no incentive, they might just want to use it for their own gain. I think for a lot of people, if they're salaried, this is my personal experience. If people are salaried and they don't see a way to increase their benefits or their income, like for me in my business, if I want to make more money, I just go get more clients. It's not, I've got the training programs and that, and there might be extra work in terms of getting the onboarding and hiring new staff and making sure they get figured out. But generally, I've got a lot of the systems in place since I use a lot of software. So if I want to do something, I just go make some more money. But if you're a salaried employee, you don't necessarily see that road, that path. So I think that's where incentives come in to how they can get there doing things that benefit the company versus becoming a parasite to the company.
True, but that also we also educated them and say, hey, it's not worth to bet on your reputations, your and all that, if you get terminated due to only maybe 20,000 peso or worth of stuff. It is not worth it because it's the whole your whole life, your whole career that is being ruined because of that. Yeah.
I that's a great to give a story for that. I actually recently dealt with that with an agency that I'm helping a client get up for handling some phone here in the Philippines, a phone team. And the agency was skimming $350 off the top and offering the agents less money than what was agreed upon the offer would be. But what they didn't realize is that there had been a higher churn and a lower quality of talent. They were having a hard time putting butts in seats. Meanwhile, the sales calls are selling a $2,000, a $12,000 US price point. And I lost because I'm in the Philippines. The client asked if I could be boots on ground, do a pop-in. type thing. But I remember I was like, guys, like you are getting a commission on every sale and you're sacrificing, because the company is trying to do sales every day. Like they're trying to make $2,000 to $12,000 sales per day. You don't build a world-class team scamming $350 US so you can have a little more extra money in your pocket. Like guys, like what is wrong with you? We put together a great package, a great offer that we might even attract talent from other companies. Right. Come work for this. And instead you thought we were paying them too much. And so you gave them a better offer and pocketed the extra cash for yourself. And now you've got emotionally unstable people. We got a couple good people, but it's supposed to be like six seats. And I'm like, we have two good people and it has been musical chairs for the other. And I think that's a great point of view, great perspective there. Where do you think the future of this kind of thing is going? Because we've obviously right now, there's a lot of geopolitical things happening, economic things happening around the world. There's a lot of technology that's very disruptive. Some people, myself included, feel that there's a particular unelected group that have a specific agenda they seem to want to impose on the world. How do you see all this in terms of what you're doing and how you're handling people? Obviously, we also just went through this pandemic where there was a lot of division in countries and people around the world. How do you handle that? And what are you looking at? I'm sorry if this is like a big question, but what are you paying attention to that's you see coming down the road in the next 3, 5, 10 years that you think listeners maybe should be paying attention to as well?
I think it's lack of manpower. Yeah, because everyone turning to do their own business, and also throughout this pandemic, they already turned on to do their own business, to build their own business, or to work from home. They required only work from home job and all that. So the businesses like us, we are really struggling with the manpower.
I've heard that from almost everybody that I know that has large bases. New hires are tough. It seems like there's, like you said, a lack of manpower and increased competition.
Exactly. Because people around the world, especially Macau, Singapore, and all that, they are being recruited, our team members, and a lot of them already moved over there. And some of them were just migrated to US, to Canada, to Australia. So we are really, a lot of talent is being moving out. Yes.
Right. Sounds like there's a more of a focus on excellence, one, because of increased competition, but also it needs the staff want to work for someone that does something excellently. And then it also sounds like there's more of training staff up, like bringing people in and training them up and trying to retain the staff that you have.
So we also have to look at how to streamline the work and maybe automated some of the work, because I always tell my team, I said, don't expect we could get any bigger manpower than what you have currently. What is it that we did previously that we can combine and consolidate or streamlining on the process? So those are the things that we are looking at also.
I love that. That's a great tip. And it's not automating for some people. And I'm super guilty of this. I've automated things that didn't work before I automated them. And after I automated them, they still didn't work. So you really got to crawl, walk, run into automation. You have to do it manually and then automate it, seek to automate. And with the technology today, people would be surprised how much is possible.
Yes.
So now, what is there anything? First off, this has been, I've got a couple pages of notes here. I love that things that we've talked about first off is understanding, of course, complying with the laws, but also the culture. And so what may be the culture in one country may not apply to another. And you really need to be aware of that. Dealing with people with respect, understanding that your culture may not communicate well with other cultures and trying to meet halfway, trying to be maybe more indirect and go back to some of those old school, basic treating people well and separating people from the issues, which feeds into some of the stuff that we talked about with increased competition, having to focus on excellence, building up staff, but also like you talk about building relationships, not just with customers, clients, but with our own staff as well.
Correct.
And that new touch. And then we also talked about really like obsessing over the small details, it sounds like, with clients and customers. Mm-hmm. If you miss versus misses, it could cost you a whole lot of business. if that was consistently getting that wrong. And he also mentioned that you hire for soft skills. You didn't specifically say soft skills, but you hire based on personality because you can train the skills, but it's hard to make an introvert who's super shy suddenly become super social. And someone can be an introvert and still act that way, but they have to be able to demonstrate it and turn that switch on when they're at work, because that's what people are paying for. So I thought that was really good. Yeah, you talked about giving gifts, comping, doing spot audits and reminders, really trying to not micromanage the team, empower them, but empower them with supervision.
Correct.
I think is really good. Is there anything that I haven't asked you that I should have asked you?
I cannot think of anything.
Yeah, this was a great call. There's a lot of great details and insights on here. If people have more questions, if they want to follow up, what are some of the best ways for them to reach you or get in contact?
They can reach me on my personal email.
Okay.
Manidalau@gmail.com.
So that is manidalau@gmail.com. If you have any questions for her, you can reach out to her that way. You can also look her up on LinkedIn if you want. It's Dr. Manida, MANIDAXONGMIXAYLAU. And that is pronounced, hold on, I got my notes here. Manida Song Mize Lau. Did I get it right?
That's correct. You got it on spot.
And the cloud goes wild. So Manida, this was a great call. This is, I think, going to apply now. It's going to apply 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now. These are really good basic fundamentals of business. Thank you so much for coming and sharing with my audience and I, knowing that you have your own to-dos. You're on your day off to do this interview. It is very much valued and appreciated. And thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.